This is 10-2 OEL. The start of the Vera technical net. Use the call sign K2BAR. If there's any station that has priority or urgent traffic, please come now. Good evening, everyone. Vera, Berks County Amateur Association, uses this repeater with the kind permission of the Berks County FM Association. Is there anybody who would like to have any technical questions? Would you please come now with your call sign and your name? Hello, Jim. Are there any other people that have any questions? Please come down. Okay, is there anybody that would like to check into the net? Anybody whose call starts with the letter A or W?
This is Whiskey India 2 Whiskey Steve. No question.
Thank you, Steve. Is there anybody else? Is anybody out there whose call starts with the letter N?
NS2K.
Thank you, Jim. Anybody else? Anybody whose call starts with letter K? Is there anybody else? Any letter I didn't call? So, Jim, looks like you're going to be our headliner tonight. It's going to be a short night. Go ahead, K2ZO. This is K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR. And the group, this is K2ZO. I recently made up a, in fact, I just did it, power connector, a set of power connectors for my new Kenwood 480. And in looking at the ones that came with the radio, which of course are much longer, because it can be used in a mobile, they have a fuse in both positive, which makes sense, and in the negative lead. And my question is, why would anybody put a fuse in a negative lead? I've been asking this question to a number of people. I got a couple of answers that seem pretty good. But I'd really like to bounce it around among some people that are knowledgeable. I don't know why, and the answer is on this new cable assembly I made up, I did not put a fuse in the negative lead. And I guess I'm okay, but that doesn't make any sense to me. So that's my question. Back to you.
I've heard that question asked before, or I read it actually on the Yahoo group, and the consensus was there are a few instances where something could happen and you needed a fuse in negative lead. However, I don't remember what they were, and the overwhelming consensus, 99%, was you only needed a positive lead, to heck with the few 1 in 10,000 chances. However, we have the assembled list of everybody, so we'll go over to Steve, WI2W.
Well, I don't have an answer off the top of my head. I've been scrambling to find one on the net right after Jim asked his question, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet. So I know that I've seen it come up a couple times. I think it was in Hints and Kinks a few times in QST, but to be honest with you, I never paid much attention.
Yeah, I've seen a reference, but I don't remember where. Jim, NS2K. NS2K, this is K2BAF. Wow, get left out. K2ZO, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, K2ZO. Okay. The comment that I got the other morning from when I asked this question on the 75 meter net, and everybody scratched their head, but it was interesting from Ken. But LBI, WE2LBI, but I know that at one time it was common for some British automobiles to be positive ground. In which case, if you had put a radio in there, you'd want to lead in the negative. And thought perhaps maybe that was just a holdover. Because certainly no one in this day and age makes an automobile system with a positive ground. But the British did it one time. But Ken's suggestion as to why they did it was more on a mobile. And I think that's where why they do it, because of a mobile installation. Okay, but why? Well, he said, take a look at this. What would happen if somehow, inadvertently, the ground either corroded or broke on the minus of the battery that goes to the frame? That would ground the engine and starter through the cable from the radio, because the radio was grounded, then let's say to the frame by the antenna and whatever, and then the negative lead, and that would of course do some damage during the startup transient or whatever when you start your automobile or whatever. And therefore, by putting the fuse in the negative lead, that would stop that thing. And that is the best answer I ever got asking this question. I was just wondering if anybody else has another one. Bingo. I think you nailed it.
That's the one I misremembered also. Steve.
Yeah, sorry for going out of turn, but that's it, Jim. That's what I remember reading, so that makes the most sense. An unlikely scenario, but certainly a possible one. And yeah, if you hit the key and tried to turn it over and it started to go through your radio wires, they would light up like Christmas tree lights and maybe cause a fire almost instantly without that much current flowing through that little 16-gauge wire, 18-gauge, whatever it is. So, put 100 amps through that, and you're going to melt something real quick. So I think you got it. Yeah, well, I didn't get it. It was Ken, WA2LBI, that pointed that out to me. And perhaps he had read it somewhere or whatever. But so, actually, it makes sense in a mobile installation then, I guess, to put a fuse in a negative lead. And the thing that brought this up was that I purchased two fuse holders, inline fuse holders. Andrew gave me some cable, and I purchased the plugs and made up a separate set of plugs for my connectors here and cables for my 480 to bring on field deck. All right, I look forward to having to play with that radio on field deck. Yeah, I'm very impressed with it. What I have is I have two SS-25 Astron solid-state supplies. And as you know, this radio has two 12-volt plugs. So we're going to parallel it up, power it up with the two Astron switching supplies, because they weigh only about 4 pounds apiece, as opposed to the 50 amper that I have underneath the bench.
Sounds good. Jim, NS2K, are you back in?
Yes.
MS2K, sorry, I was engaged otherwise on the phone, by a young man who was shy. He's like, I wasn't sure. Come on, call in. Don't be shy. There's nobody here going to bite. Anyway, didn't really have any questions, but that certainly sounds like a good answer on the minus supply fuse lead. And the other point, I think, is with a mobile installation, it needs to be on the engine side of the firewall.
Jim, over to you.
Okay, it's K2ZO. Yeah, I agree with this on the engine side of the firewall, because running leads through the firewall without a fuse on them is an invitation to disaster. If one of those heavy-duty cables ever shorted, boy, you'd really have a problem. So, that's probably where the fuses belong. And I guess if you think about the installation, a lot of people haven't really done that.
I have an 80-amp fuse on my 4-gauge cable going through my battery in the back.
Yeah, well, I'd say that that's a good thing to have.
It's mounted 4 inches off the battery. There's 4 inches of wire, then the fuse holder, and then the wire connects into it.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, in making up these supplies, I did a little detective work, and I did find out that on the Astron supplies that I have, and I have a couple of them, four of them to be exact, all of the negative leads are grounded to the chassis and to the center ground lead of the power connector. I don't know if everybody's aware of that.
Jim, over to you.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure that I like that idea, but it's obviously what they do and what they have done for quite a while. And we haven't had too many bad experiences with that fact, at least I don't think so. But I was never crazy about grounding the minus side. I've had some power supplies where if I didn't do that, I had way more RF noise on the output. Apparently they were mixing their minus and their ground and shield all in perhaps an improper manner. But that was not exactly desirable in that case, because I had a situation where I did need to isolate from the neutral, or I'm sorry, from the ground.
Steve?
I wasn't aware of that. I've got a couple Astron supplies. Now you made me curious. I'll have to go take a look at these. I've got an RS-50M that I've had for, 15 years plus, and it just keeps on ticking. And I recently picked up an SS-30M. Which is the 30-amp switcher with the meters on the front, and that's what I brought over to the Boy Scout event with my TS-2000, and I really like that little supply. It's lightweight, doesn't seem to produce any RF noise, at least none that I can discern, and it's pretty neat. Back to Nick.
That sounds good. I don't have an Astron supply, so I wouldn't know. Jim? Is there any more questions?
No, but I think Steve is going to find that the Astron supply has the has the negative lead grounded, at least in the ones that I have it is. I guess that's a standard practice, but I could see where that would run you into problems, especially, like, say, with some audio systems and things like that. I know that when I was fooling around with the audio preamps here that grounding things sometimes cause more grief than they were worth. So, there we go. But I have an Astron adjustable 35 amp, and that's definitely got me and the Midas lead strapped right to ground. So, and I think, you know, just about all of the others do the same thing.
Wow. Jim, over to you.
Yeah, I've got, actually I've got one of the little Alinco, whatever it's, 32 or 30, whatever they call it. It's some weird number. And also the, one of the Astron switchers, the SS series. And I haven't, they're not that old, and I can't say that I've heard any noise out of either one of them on HF. Then again, the antenna is not right next to the power supply either, so that may be part of that problem. So I have no complaints on either one as far as RF noise is concerned. The little unusual part of the Alinco is it's got a frequency tweak, so that if you ever did think you heard a noise that might be attributable to the power supply, you can move the switching oscillator slightly and see if the frequency of the noise changes or goes away. In any case, I suppose it's more of a confidence building thing than anything else. But one of the situations that I've got, hang on, with the boat is I want to make sure when I go up here, I don't know, maybe this weekend if I get brave, is to make sure that the float supply does not use the AC system ground. I don't think it does because I haven't had all that much corrosion. Some of the other boats around me have corrosion issues, and one of the guys I know checked through a lead into the water and found something like 8 volts potential between that and the dock 8 power ground. So that's a little more interesting than I'd care for. With the broadcasting, we use a slightly different wiring system. Hang on. Where we use isolated ground. It's an IG ground system that basically broadcast and production houses and that sort of thing can use. But we, in that case, we run 4 wires to each and every outlet. There's a ground neutral hot and another chassis, or there's a separate ground that goes not on the ground pin, but on the shell of the box. So the box is a different ground from the ground pin on the plug itself. And that seems to solve a lot of ground loop issues. And those all grounds all go back to a star point. And each area transformer, typically 100 amp three-phase 440 transformer, those are all starred back to a single point in the building. So we try pretty hard to avoid hum. We don't always succeed, but it works pretty well.
Jim, it sounds like a hospital ground to me, where they have the extra ones and it's got the extra little red dot on it. Jim, KZO, over to you.
Okay, well, we have used things like that in industrial, in my job for automation and control systems where noise can come in, especially from various different things out there. And, of course, they've been using isolated grounds for years in those type applications.
Steve?
Yeah, no comment.
Okay. We can let Jim and Jim talk to each other. And it's okay, over to you.
I don't know. I was hoping that Chris would kick in here, at least say hello. He's the young man that went out with Tony and I to Dayton. He passed his test the Monday before Dayton, and it took yet another week after Dayton before he finally got posted by the FCC. So it was kind of frustrating for him. But he had purchased a radio while he was out there, and couldn't push the talk button. So that was pretty upsetting. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it was because all the ARRL staff were out at Dayton or if there was some other snafu, but it took way longer than we were certainly hoping for the whole thing to come up. But which brings up the other point. Sounds like I really need to get off my duff here and submit my VE accreditation application.
W2AKR repeater.
I was surprised there was like 12 VEs when I took my extra exam in February. Steve, over to you.
Yeah, it's been a while since I took my last test, so I'm really not up on how long things take, but we'd like to hear from you. I think you said his name was Chris, so chime in, say hello. This is WIQW.
Okay, I got one question for Mr. KGZO. If I was to construct an 80-meter antenna, and I was looking at the antenna handbook, I was looking at the ARRL, and I was looking at, I have four different antenna books that I've bought over time, and one of the antennas that show a multi-band antenna, and basically there's it's a halfway dipole bedroom center, and it'll have one wire for each band, and they come out and they separate. At the end, they're a couple feet apart. And my question, if I was trying to make an 80-meter dipole using that method, how far apart would I need the wires to be, and would they have to be separated the whole length, or just, you know, separated at the end, and whatever they separate in between, that's it? Over to you, K2ZO. This is K2BAF.
Okay, K2BAR, this is K2ZO. Last comment on the WEs and the exams. The only one president at the time I took my exer was Mr. Finkelman at the FCC downtown New York. And I left there and I went up town a little bit and did some shopping in Radio Row, so that gave you an idea how long ago that is. I have an 80-40 meter dipole here, Noel, in which I have separated the ends to avoid any interaction, and I find that you don't need a whole lot of separation. But if you have a whole lot of other ones, the one that really gives you grief is the 15 and 20, because they're not truly harmonically related. 40 and 80 seems to work fine, no problem. The 20 and 40, that works good. 80-40. But when you start throwing a 15 and a 20, you tend to get a little bit more of an interaction. In other words, you don't get a good SWR all the way on everything. That's about the only thing I've ever noticed in interaction and problems with that type of antenna. And many people have just used twin lead and just cut the piece to the second, you know, antenna, and it's worked quite well.
My question was a little different. Since the 80-meter band is half of a megacycle wide, what would happen if I took one wire and tuned it to 3.5, split it, and then take another lead and tune it to 3.6, another one 3.7, another one 3.8, another one 3.9, whatever, you know. Or maybe just put the first one 3.55, 6.5, 7.5, 8.5, 9.5. That would give me five wires. Would it work, and How far should I put them apart at the end?
Yes, the answer is it will work. And if you put a number of them, if you put the two dipoles, one for 3 points, say you cut one for 35.50 or so, and cut one for 39.50, you'll have a low SWR down at the 35.50 and a low SWR at the 39.50, but in between that, the SWR will kind of climb, and it'll be a little bit higher than if you had an individual antenna. In other words, just one cut for either 3.5 or 3.9. So adding another one in between there does make it work. And the ends don't have to be that far apart. It'll work.
Are we here talking 6 inches? Are we talking a foot? How about if I just took and just thread the wires, something light, plastic conduit or something, like things of plastic, hung the top one from some copper weld and made the top one copper weld, and maybe make that one the longest one, and ran each wire underneath it 6 inches, a foot, and how far apart?
I would think that you'd want to be at least a foot or two apart. And at least to get it to work, reasonably well. Why don't you just put up a single dipole and use an antenna tuner, and that'll work fine.
Okay. Well, I was trying to get away from using an antenna tuner on my 740. I think it's very fussy. It likes to shut down immediately when the SWR goes up at least a little bit. I have much better success with the 530 SG. That thing ignores. I think I probably could work into a Slinky slung along the floor, and I think it would put out 100 watts.
Comment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, why not just build a 75-meter bazooka? Great, and doesn't that solve the broadband problem? Jim might have some comment on that.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, well, that's the other answer. And we've built a few of those, and they work quite well. So you want to build a bazooka? No problem.
That's a single-band antenna, though, correct?
Yes, it is. It's a single-band antenna.
So can I use my 1,000-foot of wire, or do I have to use something special?
Well, it's basically a folded dipole made out of coax, and so you need coax to make you it, and you can use 75 ohm coax from TV type stuff, and it works fine.
Guy from DirecTV left 500 foot in a roll sitting in my electrical room.
That's all you need.
Jim and S2K, have we left you out?
Nope, I'm fine. Thank you very much, NS2K. And I think I heard somebody else, but the top end there, your call got chopped off.
YLH here, K2YLH.
George, welcome, K2YLH, K2BAR. Mr. Jim, K2ZO, has a question for you.
George, the question is, why do the people from ICOM and Kentwood, Yaesu, when they give you power supply leads, put a fuse in a negative lead?
That's so that you don't draw your car current through your negative lead if your negative lead to the battery goes. That's the important part.
Okay, well, that's the answer that we've come up with. So that's good. I did not know that until the other day when Ken made that comment. So, but I figured I'd just bounce it out here and see what anybody else would come up with.
I thought Noel had a question on an inverted L for 160 meters.
Well, we were working up to that. If I do the same thing on 160 meters, do I, assuming I don't want to use a tennis tuner, if I have 35 foot from the ground up, would I be better off making an inverted L working against whatever ground I have, or make an inverted L and work against a wire on top of a wood fence? I started seeing some antennas that seem to imply that might work.
If you will, what I'm using right here is Ed Knoll's 300 ohm Ribbon Twin Lead inverted L. It works very well. It's also in the RSDB handbook. And you use, I don't have the dimensions in front of me right now, it's in the other room. But you use a length of 300 ohm ribbon, and you have about a 17 foot wire piece on the end. What the beauty of this one is, the 300 ohm ribbon, you bring it right down to an SO239 connector. Because it gives you approximate impedance transformation down to 50 ohms. So you can use it without a tuner. But I use mine with a tuner because I go entirely across the 160 meter band. Now they have it set up that you cut the antenna from the low end or the high end. Well, I cut it just about in the middle, and I can bring it down right to 1.8 and up to almost 2. And I have a low SWR after I tune it with the automatic antenna tuner. I don't depend upon it being in resonance, but it has worked out well for me. In the contest, I hear them in Europe, and I hear them stateside. As Larry says, he doesn't know how I hear these guys. He can't hear them. But the inverted L works great. And you don't need too many radios with it. I have about 8 radios, and I tied up to my neighbor's chain link fence. Talking about running an elevated radio, yes, that will help, but you still have to have the length of it, a quarter wave minimum. But you really, for an elevated radio, you should have a minimum of 4 to get the resistance down. You want to get your ground resistance down as low as possible. The higher the ground resistance, the more power goes into the ground. And I said, this antenna works out very well. And in the RSGB vertical antenna book, they've got one for 80 meters, which also works. And in fact, I made one, but I haven't put it up yet. But they said the 160 meter twin lead inverted L has worked out very well for me. Back to that.
Thank you, George. Anyway, I do have a G5RV. I have the 102.1. And so I do have 80 meters now with the tuner. And I was just looking to see if I could do better and make a no-tune combination 80 meter, 160 meter by using the multiple wires on the other side of the house away from the G5RV. It would be about 40 feet away, but unfortunately in the same direction. Steve, we haven't heard from you. WIQW-NQO-KUBAF.
Yeah, I've been doing some surfing as I've been listening here. There's a real interesting site put up by a guy with the call of K0BG. And I think Mitch actually recommended that site, and we listed it in our newsletter 1 month. But he's a mobile operator and goes into great detail about all things mobile. And basically, he said he's got a link to General Motors mobile installation instructions, and they say the same thing, Jim, that you put the fuse in the negative lead to prevent the current flowing through the radio in case the battery comes loose off the chassis. So that seems to be the answer, at least the one that I've found so far. It's a really good site for mobile installation info as well. And so far as the antennas go, the antenna you're talking about, George, sounds pretty interesting. I'm going to see if I can find that up on the net. You're using 300 ohm lead. So thanks for the tip. Always looking at and playing with antennas, so thanks for that.
Okay, one last time through to see if anybody has anything to say. We'll go to the top of the list. Jim, KGZO.
Okay, KGZO. Steve, that antenna is basically a Marconi antenna. And you may find it referenced. I know I found it referenced as a twin lead Marconi type antenna. And of course, the idea of using the twin lead for the radiating element is it does bring up the radiation resistance. So it actually makes a pretty good antenna. And I was going to put one up here this winter and never get around to it. Maybe next winter. Gotta do it for 160. And that'll be about it here for me. I'm just going to listen out here. This is KGZO.
Thank you, Jim. Steve, WIQW, this is KGBR.
I thought a Marconi was just a quarter wave set against ground.
That's what this is.
So what's with the twin lead? Is it just a fat conductor?
No, what you do is you step it up. You step up the impedance by doing that using a twin lead. You take the twin lead, you get it out that way, and you ground one side of the twin lead and feed the other side. So when you step it up by 4-1.
All right. Now you got my curiosity peaked. I'm going to go look it up. Thanks a lot, guys. WIQW listening out.
W2TTT.
That's okay.
2TT.
Ah, Gordon, W2TTT. You missed all the good stuff.
Well, thank you for carrying the net tonight. As I was at my son's pre-graduation dinner, that was very nice. So, what happy topics did we discuss, gentlemen?
KGZO first.
One of the topics that we discussed, Gordon, was why do the manufacturers recommend that you put a fuse in the negative lead of your radio?
And the answer is?
In a mobile installation, if you lost your ground off your battery, you can do lots of damage.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm good with that.
Okay, Jim, and it's 2K.
Oh, not a whole lot of questions, but some nice discussion. And, yeah, the other thing that I had pointed out, somebody might also have, I don't know, was that both the fuses on both the hot and negative lead should be on the engine side of the firewall, just in case you get some chafing or whatever, or there's a problem in the car. At least the fuse is going to sacrifice itself, not the length of wire between there and the battery, which could be much too exciting. Anyway, need to at some point talk to our good friend Ray about the electrical problem they had over at WABC the other day. I don't know that he wants to talk about that on the radio, but someday I got to go beat him up. Anyway, not a whole lot else. NS2K, back to net.
Thank you, Jim. George, K2ILH. You tell Gordon about your interesting 160-meter antenna. Oh, nothing hurt. So, one last thing. I'm driving to the kit night, and we were talking on the radio to Steve, and I was telling him about this guy just gave me 1,000 foot of 18-2. Wondering if I can make an antenna with it. It's 18-2. Looks like circular enough wire. It's marked plenium safe or whatever, so it wouldn't kill you if it burns in the heating duct. And he told me I should donate it to the Ramapo Indians. He said they could use it to wire one of their outhouses as a, you know, for electricity. He told me that I would be the first man that would wire a head for a reservation.
Oh. Oh, man. I knew there was a punchline to this.
We were laughing so hard. And my question for the technical, that is, did he have this ahead of time, or did it just come out of the air as we, Tony and I, were talking about this 1,000-foot of wire? And over to you, Gordon, W2TTG, K2BAF.
Okie doke. You know, I was, you know, just happened to use the Pro 3 today to listen to AM radio, which I normally don't do. And I looked it on the spectrum analyzer on WABC, and I said, gee, that carrier looks a little odd. And then I tuned up the dial to WNYC, and it didn't have some of the same strange little sidebands floating around. I tuned down to WOR, and there was a similar to WABC's, but just a different subcarriers on there. And I said, oh yeah, they have all that funky stuff for stereo and all that HD type stuff. And it's very impressive looking. And you can actually tune it, and while you can't decode it, you know, with a regular receiver, you can listen to it and hear all the digital glop that accompanies normal AM carrier. And if you want to know what a normal AM carrier broadcast looks like, look at WNYC. So it was kind of neat to do. I must say, it was something different. Maybe we could take some screenshots of it and maybe some audio recordings as well. That might be something interesting to do as part of a presentation on HD, AM HD, and AM stereo, and DRM, digital radio mundial, things like that. That might be something to think about in the future. Anyway, back to that. Antonio, W2TTT, and again, thank you for hosting that tonight.
Comment.
Go ahead, comment.
K2YLH. I've got the information. I had the wrong author's name. That Marconi antenna is in simple low-cost wire antennas for radio amateurs by William I. Orr, W6SAI, and Stuart Cohen, W2LX. And as he calls it, twin lead Marconi. If I folded two-wire end-fed antenna, I just enrolled them to the folded dipole, is used, the radiation resistance and efficiency may be boosted to a reasonable value, making the antenna easier to match today's transmitters having 50-ohm terminations. As with any good end-fed antenna, a ground radio wire is required with this antenna. The folded antenna is made of a length of 300-ohm TV ribbon, connected to a short length of wire. No antenna tune is required for this antenna. Where he has for 160 meters, he has the low segment and the high segment. So I cut mine in the middle, and I use a tuner to cover the whole end. And the ribbon forms a kind of linear feedback transformer, which is very efficient and practical. Steve, that's what you want to look for. If anybody wants dimensions, I can give them to them now.
Perhaps you could photocopy it and bring it to the next fair meeting, which is coming Sunday.
Oh, we already got that, so I'll have to find my copy. I was just looking for it, so I'll bring a couple of copies of that, and the one from the RSGB. It's similar. And then I did one for Larry for 40 meters. Just calculated it out. You have to use the velocity factor for the TV ribbon, and then add the wire length to it to make up for the full length. But it's a simple, and it works pretty good with a minimal amount of radials on the ground.
Sounds good. Any more comments before we close it in?
The comment to NSK.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, Jim should look at Ibiquity, I-B-I-Q-U-I-T-Y, I guess it is. Google. It'll fix the spelling. They're the driving corporation behind all this HD radio business. And I find it absolutely amazing that they can run the HD power output something like 10 dB lower than the main carrier and still get very good coverage. In part of the problem is with AM, it's actually father, and at night it would be an absolute disaster because it carries so well. With Skip, it would be a mess on AM, so I don't think they're using that at all at night. Yeah, they do use the HD radio on AM, but it also means that with the transmitter, you have to really, really filter the sidebands very carefully, and it also means that the antenna has to be fairly flat past the full channel passband.
NS2K. Yeah, it's also going on that short wave, and they're complaining about it in some of the short wave news groups I'm on. Any other comments? Well, nothing heard. Time for me to go get my dinner. It's been a late night. I know Gordon already had his. So, I want to thank the Burton County FM Association for the use of the repeater, and officially declare the Baronet TechNet closed. Everybody have a great day. That's K2BAS, clear.